This week, we'll discuss the union's response to furloughs at the Defense Department and Environmental Protection Agency with AFGE Defense Conference Vice Chair Patty Vyers and EPA Council 238 President Chuck Orzechowski. We'll also learn about tips for furloughed federal employees with GovLoop Community Engagement Director Andrew Krasmarczyk. But first, we've been joined by AFGE Legislative and Political Director Beth Moten. Beth, welcome back.
Thank you, Jason. It's good to be back.
Beth, a lot happening for you these days. What's the latest with AFGE's legislative priorities on Capitol Hill?
Well, Jason, you know, everything has sort of been stalled for at least the moment because of the sequester and all of the impacts that the sequester is having on agency programs. A lot of what's going on right now is sort of behind the scenes between the agencies and Capitol Hill trying to figure out if some of the agencies can get some relief from the harshness of sequestration, the across-the-board cuts to the programs, projects, and activities in each agency budget. And so we're pretty focused on that, trying to get the Congress to put pressure on agencies which have not made their final decisions yet. And in particular, we're working to try to put pressure on Secretary of Defense Hagel to reduce or eliminate what is now the 14-day proposed suspension furlough for every single civilian who works for the Department of Defense. It's very clear from the information we've gotten from the Navy and the Air Force that neither of those branches needs to furlough employees at all in order to meet this budget target. And yet Secretary Hagel and his comptroller are saying that all the civilians in the entire department need to, I believe that what they say is, jump in the deep end of the pool together. And I just think that's insanity. And the metaphor itself makes me think, you know, they're interested in watching everybody drown. Yeah, I just don't understand it. There's no reason why this has to happen. And so we asked Congressman Adam Smith, who's the ranking Democrat on the House Armed Services Committee, to circulate a letter to the Secretary opposing this mindless, across-the-board nonsense. And we got 126 members of the House to sign that letter, both Republicans as well as Democrats.
Beth, I think you hit the nail on the head there, that this really is an across-the-board cut in every sense of the way. Why not do it more targeted?
You know, originally, I think people believed that they had to do it a certain way, and I think there's plenty of pressure that was coming from Capitol Hill as well as OMB on just doing straight percentage across the boards and every what they call program, project, and activity, which is almost everything in any agency budget. But the reality is some of those agencies got additional money during the last continuing resolution, which freed up their ability to make some changes, for example, in the Bureau of Prisons. We were in a situation where they were looking at something like 11 to 14 days for correctional officers to be furloughed. And as you know, we've talked on your show a number of times about understaffing already in federal penitentiaries is just alarming. And we tragically lost a couple of correctional officers, one who was murdered in Canaan, Pennsylvania, at a penitentiary there by an inmate, stabbed 100 times. And a few days later, the control officer who was on duty that night killed himself because he felt personally responsible. And, you know, that was just a horrible, horrible situation to have had to deal with for those families and for the officers who've worked with those gentlemen. But it's also just, you know, what happened is the attorney general went to the funeral. And he came back and a few days later issued a memorandum that said that they were no longer going to do furloughs in the Bureau of Prisons. And then not long after that, he announced that they had gotten enough money or reprogrammed money or made other arrangements or whatever magic he was able to muster, that there would be absolutely no furloughs in the entire Department of Justice, period. So we know that these things can change as they dig a little deeper into the weeds and figure out whether they've got more flexibility than they previously thought. We believe that same authority rests with Secretary Hagel and with, you know, the EEOC commissioner and EPA and other places where they're still planning to furlough employees, HUD and some in the Department of Agriculture as well.
So it sounds like what you're saying here is that there is some flexibility within the agencies, perhaps to move some money around under the right situations, but it's really about changing the mindset of the decision makers. And I think, as you noted earlier, the Navy and the Air Force have come out and said that there really is there's no need for furloughs. What's it going to take to change the mindset across the entire Defense Department?
Well, I don't know exactly what it will take. I will say that Secretary Hagel did promptly respond to the letter from 126 members of the House. And the only glimmer of hope was that he, at the very end of the letter, he suggested that if Congress would assist him with reprogramming requests, that maybe they could make some changes. So we're going to try to see what we can do to move that along and to provide the pressure from Capitol Hill to the Secretary's office to see if we can get that done. Reprogramming just means asking for permission to move money from one account into another, and that has to be granted by the Appropriations Committees in the House and the Senate.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, and we're here with Beth Moten, AFGE's Legislative and Political Director. Beth, talk to me about how you can influence that process a little bit on Capitol Hill with the reprogramming requests. What can you do to change the conversation or, you know, help them understand that things can be moved around in a way that's productive for everybody?
Well, I mean, I think that the primary thing we can do at the AFGE National Office staff level is talk to people who work for the Appropriations Committees and explain to them exactly what we're hearing back from you know, official correspondence from the Secretary's office, but also back channels from the Pentagon and other places where we're getting some signal that the things could be different. And when we get those back channel communications, they can give us specific suggestions that we can then make to the appropriators, which they can then send back to the Secretary's office and say, we believe you have the authority to do it in this particular way. And these are usually things that I'm not particularly myself all that familiar with, because it's real inside baseball, agency budgeting, you know, at the comptroller level kind of information. But we can try to understand it as best we can and pass those messages to the Appropriations Committees and then hope they'll get those back to the powers that be.
And then, Beth, talk about the need for AFGE's members to essentially come in behind you and put that extra pressure on their members of Congress to do things here that would help them in their jobs, in their livelihoods, et cetera.
Well, it's absolutely critical, Jason. You know, I like to think that my staff and I do a good job, but we're nothing. We're absolutely nothing if our members do not back us up and do everything they can to persuade their representative and two senators that what we're talking about up here on Capitol Hill on their behalf is, in fact, really important to them. And we send out a lot of information via email. We have 8 legislative and political organizers on the ground throughout the country to work directly with locals to promote a vigorous legislative and political program at the AFGE local level. And we're always eager to see if we can get people who are interested in making phone calls and going to congressional offices for visits and planning press conferences and throwing up rallies in front of the congressional offices of people who've been hostile to us, those sorts of activities. And in fact, we recently just brought on a new director of field mobilization, Tucker McDonald, in order to try to ramp up that effort. And I'm hoping that you'll have a chance to interview him on your show in the very near future.
Certainly, we'd love to do that and have a chance to talk to Tucker. Beth, talk to me a little bit about the outcome then of having a fully mobilized and energized membership. Talk to me about some of the things that can be a result of such energy.
Well, I think if we have people in the Department of Defense, our members in the Department of Defense, really engaged in fighting back, we can turn this whole furlough thing around. I really think it makes a huge difference when our members talk directly to their representative and senators, let them know. And it's not just to let them know that it would be very hard for you and your family to lose 20% of your pay from now until the end of the fiscal year, but what is going to happen to the mission of the agency if you're not there? And, you know, I was recently in Minneapolis at a council meeting for our Department of Defense locals, and one of the gentlemen there stood up and described what it is he does, and essentially everything that he and the people in his organization do at the Department of Defense, every single thing they touch goes back to a warfighter in Afghanistan or Iraq. Every single thing they touch goes back. And so you can imagine the emotional commitment that they have to those people who have put their lives and, you know, themselves in harm's way. And they feel not just an ethical obligation to do their job because they're getting paid, they feel a moral obligation to protect those soldiers to the best of their absolute best of their ability. And it was very, very moving to hear him describe that, because in some ways what he's describing is would easily be dismissed as by other people, by people who don't like the government. It's bureaucratic logistics silliness. But it's not, you know. It takes some organization to in order to get some materials and some equipment back to the people who are actually fighting wars, and that's what our people can do, and that's what they do, and they do it with a great deal of pride.
And to continue on with that notion of the dedication of the federal employee, because of that dedication, you also want to compensate them fairly and give them an opportunity to live a good life. So let's talk a little bit about what might be in the president's budget to do that. I know there was a proposal for a 1% increase for federal employees, but also a couple of things there that might be difficult for federal employees to swallow, like a requirement in the amount that they increase in their pension contributions.
Yes, that's exactly right. It was a proposal for a pay raise of 1%, which is welcome, but, I mean, hardly something for us to jump up and down with great enthusiasm over. We're working right now to try to make sure that, in fact, will stay in, through the remainder, you know, so that it will actually go into effect in January. We've got some work to do with the Appropriations Committees when I've been engaged in meetings on that just, in fact, this week, and I will be again tomorrow. But I think it was very disturbing to see the proposal in the president's budget to increase the contributions by federal employees to their pensions by 1.2%. It would be phased in over 3 years. It would be an increase, therefore, of 0.4% each year for 3 years. And it's not right. It's just simply not right for them to do that. It's another $35 billion that will be coming out of the pockets of federal employees. And to date, federal employees have given up over $100 billion to deficit reduction, far more than any other group of middle-class Americans has even thought about contributing. Our people have given up 3 years of a pay raise. That's $90 billion in savings. And then new employees, people who were hired as of January 1st this year, are paying four times as much for their pension as employees who were hired before that. And that was a $15 billion hit. So already federal employees have given up $105 billion. If they do what the president's proposal suggested, that would be another $35 billion. I mean, we're getting really close to $150 billion in savings while nobody else has ponied up a nickel. And it's just not right. It's just not right. We really cannot afford to do that. The other thing that's in the president's budget that worries me is just some proposals on changes to the federal employees' health benefits program that are fairly complex and even arcane, but we did testify. Jackie Simon, our public policy director, testified about these proposals about 10 days ago before the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee, and we raised some very serious concerns about that. And one of the things that we said in that testimony was that we need to have the kind of advisory committee for employee organizations with OPM to deal with the Federal Employees Health Benefits Program as we have for the General Schedule Pay System, which is under the Federal Salary Council, the Blue Collar Federal Pay System, which is called FPRAC, Federal Prevailing Rate Advisory Committee, and also ETAC, ETAC, which is the Employee Thrift Advisory Committee. And on that committee sits postal unions and federal employee unions, and we work with a thrift investment board because those are the people who make the decisions about how they're going to establish the investments and run the program for the TSP, the Thrift Savings Program. So those are all extremely important advisory committees. It gives us a chance to put forth some suggestions and have them taken seriously by the agencies that administer these programs. And I will say a really good thing that did come out of that testimony is a few days later, OPM did announced that they were going to establish an FEHBP advisory committee, and they've already set the first day for the meeting. So that's good.
Beth Moten, AFGE's legislative and political director. Beth, always fun having you on the program. Thanks for taking the time today.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate it.
You're listening to AFGE's Inside Government, available on demand at InsideGovernmentRadio.com. I'm your host, Jason Fornicola, and up next, we'll discuss sequestration's impact on Environmental Protection Agency workers with AFGE EPA Council 238 President Chuck Orzechowski.